Hey, Nate, I don't know if you were on the other day. I discovered that if you, oh no, you were. I was going to say, if you gently play an unplugged electric guitar in the background whilst talking to Phil, he kills you.
No, it's just, it again, it goes back to that mic discipline.
It's fine, Phil. You made your opinions clear at the time.
All right.
I'm still in counseling for
That's
it.
That's great. Hey, okay. I'm just going to sit here, and while we talk, I'm just going to crinkle an envelope with a little cellophane.
That's fine. I'm gonna just I'm just gonna do some barbering. Little off the top.
That's beautiful. That's a great sound.
Oh, don't mind me. I'm just gonna play Fallout.
Guys, I've cast Rise of the Dark Realms. Guys.
Oh God.
Guys. I've cast Rise of the. Why is no one giving me their creatures out? Guys. Guys.
All right. I'm Phil DeLuca.
He's Nate Burgess.
I'm Nate Burgess.
I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
Right, Nate, you go second.
And we are Commanderin.
We are a barely functioning podcast. Thanks for listening. Yeah!
Wow. Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never, ever talk about three banned topics. Religion, politics, and Hearthstone. Remember to check us out on Twitter at CommanderinMTG and talk to us there. This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you. We're going to shine a spotlight on Christmas in EDH. But first, for those of you interested in playtesting decks with us online, we of course use Skype as well as a client. We've tweeted about this before. We even did an entire episode, I believe, on it. We're using the Cockatrice client and Skype. You should send a contact request to commanderin.mtg.podcast. We're trying to use that whenever we playtest decks so that people who do want to playtest decks with us can get used to that. They see that pop online and then, hey, we're playing. Isn't that right, guys?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is.
And Sean, you wanted to go over our deck testing rules, right?
So we really
should have
done this in the tech episode where we talked about how we test decks, but we'll do it here instead. So when we test decks, we apply a few house rules as hosts. And if you don't like them, sure, ask us at the beginning of the game and we can play without them if you're trying to test something outside of these rules, etc. But this is how we play. So it only really covers two things. The first is infinite combos. If you have a deck which runs an infinite combo that once it starts, you can't stop it. For example, Leyline of the Void, Helm of Domination. Then, as soon as you activate that combo, or a better example is Exquisite Blood Sanguine Bond, you lose the game. If it's a two-card combo, you are out. We don't play for two-card combo wins. The other one, if you have infinite combos which you can stop, so, for example, Azuri and Sage of Hours, which lets you take an extra turn over and over again, you can activate that combo 5 times in 1 player cycle of the table. Most infinite combos, that should be enough to win anyway. We don't play with any banned cards, but Mass Land Destruction is frowned upon, and you will be played against appropriately if you do it, as some people have found out when they get smashed for the following few games. And the only other thing we do is we try and play with cards we own. Now, we understand that's not always the case, and you might want to try out new cards because we're testing decks that you don't own, see whether you're going to buy them, and that is the whole purpose of why we do it. But if you're playing with, hey, look, I've got an Imperial Seal, and that's a $900 card you're not legitimately going to play, find an alternative. And that is to fall into the spirit of the 75% rule more than anything. So no infinite combos you can't stop, infinite combos you can play for five, and just try and not be a massive bleep when you are deck constructing with cards that you own and don't. Anything else to add to that, guys?
How many turns can you take in a row?
I know some people play, you can't take more than two, like say one additional, but that essentially puts a hard ban on time stretch, which I'm not a fan of because we're not banning cards. Phil might have a different opinion.
No, generally speaking, we try to avoid taking more than two turns in a row. I mean, I realize it does effectively ban time stretch, so I guess maybe we could make an exception for that. It's more that we're trying to prevent somebody from recurring an extra turn card repeatedly.
Yeah, I think the way I personally play it is that you can do it and you'll win the game, but every time you play with that deck from following, I'm going to let everyone know that it takes infinite turns and everyone can just arch enemy you out of the game. Same applies to how I deal with mass land destruction.
Politics.
Yeah, someday we have to record a politics episode, don't we?
If you break these rules, you will get politicked.
By politicked, I mean smashed in the face.
But the next game, because you've probably already won this one.
Yes. It will be the game after, yes.
The other aspect of playing with us is something we call mic discipline. So in general, we try not to introduce any background noise when we're Skyping with other people because it kind of, you know, it prevents anybody else from talking. It also disrupts what's going on. So if you have a television on, if you have a radio on, you probably want to turn that off when playtesting with us. If you're in the middle of a riot, I do not recommend Skyping with us.
A good example of this is friend of the show, Nick Jaragoski. When he plays with us, he is quite regularly attacked by a pack of savage dogs. But he's polite enough to mute his mic when that happens. You just hear the beginning of the bloodbath.
And to be fair to Nick, right, I don't think he can predict when the pack of wild dogs attacks. I think they simply attack.
I presume his wife opens the door to his gaming area, chucks in a leg of ham, and says, "Get it, boys!"
Yeah, packs of wild dogs don't operate on a schedule.
Yeah,
not one us humans can understand, anyway.
If you're in the middle of a riot, if you suspect you're about to be attacked by a pack of wild dogs, at least have your finger on the mute button so that you can take your turn, say what you need to, but then mute it so that it's not disrupting the rest of us. And correlated with that is try to pay attention to the game. So if you're in the middle of surfing the internet for God knows what, first, we don't want to hear it. That's kind of gross anyway. Second, try to minimize that while you're playing so that when your turn does come up, Sean does not have to ring Timmy the Turn Tortoise.
Hi, Timmy.
Like that.
Yeah, there's one person who we play with, and they will know who they are, who likes to read their BuzzFeed post, surf Reddit, shop on Amazon, and at the same time do some university work or something whilst playing, and I get angry with them using the turntable.
We have so many rules. Pay attention to the game while playing.
If you want to play Magic with us, play Magic with us. It's a pretty simple rule.
Yeah. And look, I apologize. It was just one class. I'm not doing that anymore.
Phil.
Hey, so we have a minor topic this week, don't we? It's what we played. And in for two of us, at least, that's what we play tested.
Yes, we did. So,
Sean, what have you been playing?
I built a deck using a new deck building strategy, which was I picked the commander I wanted, got every card off of EDH Rec that it recommended for that commander, put them into a pile, and used that as a pool to build the deck, just to test what EDH Rec does. So I rebuilt a Brago King Eternal deck, and it's really, really quite disgusting. It's a flicker deck. So I went for basically the best Enter the Battlefield triggers I could find. I didn't go down the stacks route for two reasons. One, I don't like stacks decks. to EDH Rec didn't recommend me many of the stacks cards. It seems that a lot of people out there don't like playing stacks, and it hasn't appeared on EDH Rec that much. What it has done playing this deck is it's highlighted two massive holes in my paper meta, which I guess will be fixed soon, which is one, people don't run enough board wipes, and two, people don't run enough spot removal. People have got lazy with doing it and are trying to win other ways and have no answers to... I had a Luminate Primordial with no protection on him that was just running, owning the table. And one player in particular was getting very upset by this. And there you go. I was like, well, run any kind of creature removal. I mean, spot removal, mass removal, anything. This problem will stop immediately for my 7 to cast 40p junk rare. Yeah. But that's been good fun. And I'll be refining it a bit and putting a few additions in. And yeah, that's that.
That's great. I experimented a little bit with Erebos. I think I actually playtested against Nate a couple of times. The same way, you just go up to EDH Rec. I was like, what do these decks look like? That was back when the community was kind of up in arms and starting to say, EDH Rec is ruining deck brewing.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
There was an undercurrent of discontent, shall we say, with EDH Rec because they believed there were vocal people within the community who were like, EDH Rec is going to ruin deck brewing. And it came up more recently, and I think I managed to convince the person otherwise, but... I had to see. I was like, well, can this, you know, can EDH Rec actually generate a deck that will own everybody? Apparently in Brago's case, it's yes. But with Erebos was a good deck, but it wasn't a great one. And I think what EDH Rec will do is produce an okay deck, right? And I think that's one of the benefits that it provides to a new player.
I ended up with a pool of 200 cards and used my own deck brewing skills to hone that down to a pile of 65, very good cards.
Oh, so you
I literally asked for a pool of cards, or did you have it? Roughly, I think it was 100, 200 is a little big. Gave me roughly, it was 150 cards from all the suggestions, not including land. And then I took that and brewed the deck out of that pool of all the suggested cards. So it gave me a limited pool, but then still applied my deck building skills from that limited pool.
Well, isn't that interesting, ladies and gentlemen? We've discovered a difference in the way we did this. So all I did was I went to edhrec.com and I selected the commander and then I told it to generate a deck list. No, did you do that with Brago?
I just literally pulled up every card that was suggested for Brago, which was many.
That's
And weirdly, awesome. I already owned most of them.
Yeah, you did.
I think I had to pay about $5 in extra cards.
We should maybe play the deck that EDH Rec just generated against the deck that you created. Of course, I think the deck that you created will be much better because you actually made decisions about what cards go in there.
Correct.
Yeah, so how close is your Brago to your old Grand Arbiter Augustine?
Very different. Very, very different. The Grand Arbiter Augustine was a much more resource taxing, whereas this deck doesn't tax your resources. It just means you can't keep permanents on the table, is what Brago does. So they're both Azorius control, but they're controlling you in very different ways. For example, the Brago deck only has, I think, two counter spells in it, whereas... and that's the surprise Pact of Negation, which is too good, and I think Render Silent. Whereas Grand Arbiter had 12 counter spells in it, and etc. etc. They play very differently as well. Everyone hates them. No one likes playing against Azorius Control, do they?
Nope.
No. Sean, if you're willing to share that with our listeners, I think that would be awesome.
Right.
I'll also put up the deck I just generated using edhrec.com just by clicking the generate deck. And we'll let listeners compare the two. And hopefully we'll hear some dissenting opinions. Some people who think that EDHREC is ruining deck building.
Nate, what are you playtesting?
Oh, well, first I was going to say, I think the EDH method of generating decks by just pushing a button, it is risky if your commander that you've chosen could go in multiple directions of strategy. Some commanders, there's only really, you know, a limited number of ways to go to really exploit that commander's abilities. But other commanders can go in multiple directions, and for those commanders, you're going to get some strange feedback from EDH Rec because it is aggregating across multiple subsets of decks in that case.
Yeah, I think Braga is a good example of that because there's a very legitimate stacks deck you can build with Braga, and then there's one that exploits end of the battlefield triggers, and then there's one that exploits the manifest mechanic. So it's three distinct paths for him, and you're going to get a weird blend if you just hit a random deck button with him, I think.
Yeah. Now, there are advanced filters that you can apply to a little to the right. You have to click to expand it, but if you want a certain commander and you want a certain type of strategy and you can think of a card that you would include the deck in your deck that embodies that strategy, add that to your filter, and then the results that EDHREC gives back will only be from the decks that already have both the commander and the cards that you've filtered in. Or out. You can filter cards out, too.
Wow, that's clever. I didn't realize it could do that. We should have an entire show dedicated to EDHREC.com. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Yeah, we should probably invite Donald Miner, or maybe something like that.
Cool, yeah, I totally agree. Is this another on-the-air invitation? It got us Jason Alt back. That was pretty cool. Yeah, hey, Donald.
Hey, Donald.
If you're listening, we'll be in touch.
The Queen has summoned you for an audience with an Englishman. Yes.
Hey, don't call me Queen.
Nate, what are you playtesting? You've got something fascinating to watch unfold.
Okay, so with the new Command Beacon coming out, I decided to give Phage the Untouchable another try, because Command Beacon is yet another of the one of the very few ways to get Phage the Untouchable onto the battlefield without immediately losing the game, because she's in the command zone. She's not in your hand, and if you cast her from anywhere other than your hand, you lose the game, which you probably don't want to do. So, yeah. It's basically a mono black good stuff deck with just a very few tricks referring to Phage. And there is a caveat in that because there are so few cards that work with getting Phage onto the battlefield, this deck does need to have more tutors than I usually play just to get those specific cards.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that. Chooses AOK.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, it you've only got two or three ways, right, to pull her out without losing the game immediately. So I think in a standard EDH strategy, you're probably looking at something more like four or five ways to do that, and a couple of tutors really balance it out. So, yeah, it was definitely fun to play against.
Oh, yeah.
I won't spoil although we should probably provide the link, but I won't spoil the way you beat me. But it was funny because as soon as you cast her, I was like, you lose. And you were like, uh-uh. And then you wiggle the card that made it so. God.
Mm-hmm.
I've won using Phage before. She wasn't my commander, but she was in my Mono Black Sheldred deck for a bit. She's not there anymore. But she was in my graveyard, and my opponent cast Rise of the Dark Realms. He said, "You can let that resolve." And I went, "Yes, I am." You lose, and I'll have my Phage back. I didn't get my Phage back. It gets exiled, but still, it's worth it. And I have lost to my own Phage as well because someone else cast Living Death while she was in my graveyard. Yeah, so. Both instances, sad times.
Yeah, there's another card called Endless Whispers that works with Phage across player graveyard boundaries.
Endless Whispers. So Endless Whispers, we've never told the story of the hilariousness of friend of the show Nick Jaragoski's Endless Whispers and my Sakura Tribe Elder, have we, Nate?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, so Endless Whispers is a black enchantment that says whenever a creature goes to the graveyard, Instead of going to the graveyard, or when it goes to the graveyard, an opponent gains control of it, of your choice. So if it's in play and my, I don't know, pick a card, reassembling skeleton dies, I have to pick an opponent to give it to. So Nick Jaragoski played, it was a Zedru Greathearted deck, but Nick Jaragoski played his Endless Whispers, to which, it was a Daxos deck, I think. To which I had a Sakura Tribe Elder in play, to which I said to Nate, would you like every basic land from your deck into play immediately? And he said, yes, I would. To which I said, excellent, so do I. I smell a deal. I'm going to sacrifice my Sakura Tribe Elder. Have my Sakura Tribe Elder, Nate. Etc.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Here, have it back.
Yeah. So Nick after that game removed. Endless Whispers, Sakura Tribe Elder being one of the most common cards in our format.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is beautiful.
Yeah. I thought it's funny. It also gave me, like, 20 experience tokens.
Oh, so this was recent.
Meryn as well. Yeah, this was very... It was Daxos versus Meryn, yeah. I can't even remember what Nate was playing. I just remember that. Endless Whispers is a very dangerous card if your opponents are going to pull political shenanigans on you. If there's a sacrifice trigger on a creature which is beneficial to them, two people can just decide to end your day.
Oh, that's great.
Or end your fight.
I want
to
do that now.
But yeah, Endless Whispers and Phage is hilarious.
Yeah, I want to do that. So Nick, if you don't mind trotting that one out to playtest sometime, I'd appreciate it. It seems hardly fair that I don't get to do an infinite Sakura Tribe Elder.
Well, yeah, you run out of basic lands at
and
some
it's not
point.
An infinite combo you cause, so. Yeah.
No.
In comparison, I'm playtesting some really boring decks. I've been tuning Zada, draw everything. Zada, of course, when you target Zada with a spell, if Zada is the only target, then it replicates across all of your other guys, all of your other creatures. And so if you have a lot of creatures out and the card happens to tack on like a cantrip effect, you end up drawing a ton of cards in red, which is fantastic. I've also been playing Meryn Recursion, but everybody knows by now what Meryn Recursion is. We'll have to get some deck lists up at some point. So, are we ready for our main topic?
I believe I am.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Nate, you went ahead and in celebration of Christmas, you built a wonderful Christmas deck, didn't you? That brings joy and happiness to...
Yeah, I did.
To you.
To me.
Children everywhere.
No, just me.
Blake's going to come down Christmas morning and say, Daddy, Daddy, what has Uncle Nate put in his Christmas deck?
Well, let me show you. So, when you picture Santa Claus, when you picture Kris Kringle, Father Christmas, what do you see? I see a bushy white beard with a round body, wearing red. I see someone with a jolly smile on their face. And it's someone who certainly knows who has been naughty. In fact, I see Grenzo, Dungeon Warden. For X, black, and a red, legendary creature Goblin Rogue 2/2. Grenzo, Dungeon Warden, enters the battlefield with X plus 1/1 counters on it. And for at any time, you can pay 2 mana, and you put the bottom card of your library into your graveyard. If it's a creature card with power less than or equal to Grenzo's power, put it onto the battlefield.
He brings gifts for you.
Yeah, he's coming out of the chimney.
Yeah, it's a Rakdos Christmas, everybody.
So we all know that Father Grenzo doesn't live in just any regular place. For the frozen terrain of the North Pole, we need snowlands.
Yes, we do.
So I'm adding basic snow mountains and snow swamps. And also on theme is thawing glaciers. It's a land. It enters the battlefield tapped. And if you pay one and you tap it, You search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. Return Thawing Glaciers to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next cleanup step. Is that...
Nice.
I've just thought of something. If you're running Snowlands, you know what card goes really good with Snowlands and looks a lot like a Christmas tree bauble?
You extra might say Scrying lens. Sheets, but I have found Scrying Sheets is underwhelming.
Oh, extra planar lens. It looks like a Christmas tree bauble, and it's perfect with Snowlands. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. All right.
And it's so expensive, yeah, that does you'd work. Need someone to give it to you as a
Happy Christmas,
gift.
Nate.
Yay.
Sean is going to buy you one.
Okie doke.
Yep. Yeah, hear the sound. There you go. To wait till I come to San Francisco right. to give it to you, though.
So now there are some apocryphal legends that say that there are elves making all those toys. But seriously, folks, who are the master tinkerers and craftsmen around here? It's not elves. Who is it? That's right. It's goblins. That's why we have Goblin Snowman for 3 and a red. He's a 1/1 creature goblin. Whenever Goblin Snowman blocks, prevent all combat damage that would be dealt to and dealt by it this turn. And he can tap to deal 1 damage to target creature it's blocking. Ow!
That's pretty fun.
Card. Where did
and
those
it's a snowman.
Where did those goblins find that carrot? Excuse me while I kill my rabbits.
Now, of course, Father Grenzo will need a reindeer to deliver his sackful of holiday Grenzo. Cheer. So we got Burnished Heart for 3 colorless. Artifact Creature Elk, 2/2. They don't have a creature reindeer, but they do have creature elks. Mm. So this is pretty close. And if you pay 3 mana and sacrifice Burnished Heart, search your library for up to 2 basic land cards. Mm. Put them onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. Pretty good?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Now, Father Grenzo has to deliver all that cheer in the middle of the night.
Oh, how does he see anything?
Yeah, nobody can see him do it, so he has to do it in the middle of the night. And that's why we have Midnight Banshee for 3 black. Creature Spirit, 5/5, with Wither. So it does damage to creatures in the form of -1/-1 counters.
How do I not have this card after a box of Modern Masters 2?
I run this card in my show.
Yeah, it's got another power that's pretty cool. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a -1/-1 counter on each non-black creature.
Oh, giving gifts God, to everyone. Nate. Lumps of coal.
So while we're on the subject of the middle of the night, there's Coalwrath Knight for 3, and black-red. These are the Rakdos hybrid manas. It's a creature elemental knight, 3/3, with flying and wither. And creatures your opponents control with counters on them can't attack or block.
I presume the word Coalwrath is the Lorwynian word for Christmas.
No, right? It's when you get so much coal in your stocking that it's just angry. It makes you angry. That's Coalwrath.
Coalwrath.
So for very bad children, Christmas is Coalwrath Knight.
If you hear any typing or clicking, that's me adding this to my cart.
All right. So moving on. 'Twas the night before Christmas.
Coalwrath Knight shuts down. I just realized how good a card Coalwrath Knight is in our format. That shuts down.
Oh, just you wait.
Tons of decks.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was skittering, not even a mouse. Oh, wait, did I say skittering? That's because I was thinking of Necro Skitter for 1 black. It's a creature elemental 1/4 with Wither.
Oh.
Whenever a creature an opponent controls with a -1/-1 counter on it dies, you may return that card to the battlefield under your control.
Oh. Nate.
Very, very
Nate.
Nice. That was also reprinted in Modern Masters 2. No, it's got a theme going. Other than
so,
Christmas.
Nate, with Coalwrath Knight out, they can't attack or block, so presumably you're going to board wipe them?
Or they can just accumulate -1/-1 counters from Midnight Banshee.
And they die, get scrubbed of counters, and come back into play under Nate's control.
I don't like this deck.
The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that Father Grenzo soon would be there. You know what else goes with chimneys? The warm hearth of the fireplace. You know what's in a fireplace after the Yule log has burned away? That's right. Crumbling ashes for one in a black enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, destroy target creature with a -1/-1 counter on it.
Oh my god.
Sorry, you look like it's tickling me. Bravo, sir, that's the pun of the year.
Burning the Yulemog. Now, Christmas time is a holiday based in religion, which is why we often see iconography depicting hands folded in prayer. Hand of the Praetors, 3 and a black, 3/2, creature zombie, with infect. Other creatures you control with infect get +1/+1. Whenever you cast a creature spell with infect, target player gets a poison counter. Now, astute listeners may notice
insult to injury
that Hand of the Praetors suggests a certain direction in deck building. And I'll leave it as an exercise for the audience to extrapolate this card's implications.
A certain Burgessian direction.
Mm-hmm.
Infect players. Every playgroup has one, don't they?
Ours is a host of the show.
Yay! See, I've done Simic Infect, now here's Rakdos Infect.
Oh, lovely.
So, moving on. The holidays are always a spectacle of festive decorations. So many colorful visual splashes of interest. Some call that kind of decoration flair. Flare of the Hatebound, 5 and a red, 4/2. Creature devil with undying. When this creature dies, if it had no +1/+1 counters on it, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control with a +1/+1 counter on it. Hey, whenever Flare of the Hatebound or another creature enters the battlefield from your graveyard, that creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player.
Mm-hmm.
But really, how often does a creature enter the battlefield from your graveyard? Well, if we read Grenzo's ability again, that's every time Grenzo successfully uses his ability to put a creature from the bottom of the deck to the graveyard and then to the battlefield. And if that creature has infect, then that creature can do direct infect damage to a target player's face when it enters the battlefield.
Jesus. Nate, Sean, have you played against this yet?
Not this deck. I've played against Flare of the Hatebound in a Marquesa deck, and it locks down the table pretty fast.
Yeah, for a more straightforward version of that effect, there's also Warstorm Surge, also for 5 and a red. It's an enchantment. And whenever a creature enters the battlefield from anywhere under your control, it deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player.
Oh, Nate, what if you have Flare of the Hatebound and Warstorm Surge out at the same time?
Well, I guess they hit you twice, huh?
Warstorm Surge, God, everyone's favorite card featuring Vikings getting hit by lightning.
Yeah, so as we hang our stockings by the fire... Yes, that's right. Our stockings.
Oh, no.
Stalking Vengeance, 5 and red. Creature avatar, 5/5, with haste. Whenever another creature you control dies, it deals damage equal to its power to target player.
This is a favorite of mine in Maelstrom Wanderer.
Mm-hmm.
This is horrendous.
So the infect creatures just hit you coming in and they hit you going out.
The Stalking Vengeance.
Oh, yeah. We should... Oh, God. We need to put a pun warning on this, don't we?
Yeah. Sheldon Menery, if you're listening and are still with us, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's already rage deleted this from his iTunes list. Assuming he's a listener.
Of course he's a listener. Wow. Hi, Sheldon.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so as we put the final Christmas ornaments on the Grenzo tree, let's top it off with a bright, fiery star for the Magi to follow, and glittering strings of Christmas lights decorating everything. So Chandra's Ignition, 3 and red is a bright, fiery star. It's a sorcery. Target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to each other creature and each opponent.
Oh, no.
And for glittering strings decorating everything, Arc Bond, 2 and a red, instant. Choose target creature. Whenever that creature is dealt damage this turn, it, that creature, deals that much damage to each other creature and each player.
Listen to the joy. Sean, listen to the joy as he says this.
And that's my Christmas theme deck.
Nate is never happier in Magic than when he is just saying, all of you burn in a big pile of ashes.
Yeah, I guess it's no surprise that his Christmas theme deck is Rakdos, is it?
What's the least Christmassy color pairing? I'm going to go with Simic.
No, it still has green in it.
Yeah.
Orzhov?
I suppose. Yeah, but that's very religious.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going to be difficult. So, Nate...
Is it actually Rakdos? Nate's managed to break that. Great.
Azorius?
Oh, yeah, that's no fun. No, you're right. Brago looks a bit like Father Christmas on his artwork. You will queue and enjoy Christmas cheer in the municipally approved way.
That's right. There are regulations for how to celebrate in Brago's world.
You may have your plate with 1/3 turkey and 1/3 stuffing and gravy. No more, no less.
Portion sizes are described in full on pages 3 through 34 of the Celebration Handbook.
You may take the equal amount of Brussels sprouts according to your BMI scale readings. No more, no less. That picture of Grenzo smiling with his keys is absolutely terrifying.
Isn't it? Yeah, he's sitting there, he's just sort of jingling them. Nate, you have terrified us both so much we went to Azorius to try to escape.
Please, put law and order over this chaos.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful.
Help me, Grand Arbiter, help me.
I suppose what we're doing right now on the YouTube video is showing pictures of Grenzo. Those two pictures, in fact, right? The one from Grenzo and then the one from the other card with Grenzo on it. But now is probably the time to put that picture of Krampus that I put in there so that people can see
Krampus.
Just how close Grenzo was modeled on the old demon spirit thing from Europe.
The American Office does a fantastic episode about where Dwight celebrates sort of old German Christmas with the Krampus. I'm sure it's the Krampus. He might call it something different, but it's based on the same fear. It terrifies everyone in the office. That show was brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nate, thank you for introducing me to the true meaning of Christmas, which is infect decks with Chandra's Ignition.
Mm-hmm. Infect that hits you in the face.
Yeah, Nate, this was a wonderful Christmas gift.
Yeah, I had a snowman and everything.
Yeah, that was great.
I like the snowman. He's like a red fog bank, but doesn't fly.
But has the added ability of causing a point of damage to anything it blocks.
Ping!
I kind of even hate to go here after such a wonderful deck like that. It feels like we've already celebrated Christmas and we're having our lovely, perhaps spiked eggnog. There's a term that we use in Magic in general, but really in EDH you hear it an awful lot. When a person describes how they have this card that combines with another card to combine with another card, it produces this awesome effect which we call Magical Christmas Land. And EDH players, man, we talk about Magical Christmas Land a lot, even if we're not naming it directly. To give you an example, I have one that I pulled from my Marath deck, and I describe this, I'm like, oh, but once Christmas actually came, and it's Marath, who of course generates tokens at will, pretty much. But if you've got Marath out with mana echoes, you have a very large supply of mana all of a sudden. And so you can, in certain conditions, if you have, say, Cathar's Crusade out, you can basically continue that cycle infinitely, which, of course, makes people sad around the table. But what makes it even sadder is when you have a card like Purphoros out. So every one of those elementals, as they enter play, generates 2 points of damage for each of your opponents. And then the gravy on top of this, like the extra, extra fresh snow that falls in Magical Christmas Land, is a card like Warstorm Surge, like Nate mentioned before, and so it's doing even extra damage there. Or Aura Shards, which of course then wipes the board clean of hostile enchantments and artifacts. It's very, very lovely. I have actually had Magical Christmas Land. I've been to Magical Christmas Land before, and it's a lovely, wonderful place. Nate, do you have an example from your own?
Sure. With Krenko, you could also use Mana Echoes, and if you put an Umbral Mantle on him, then you can pay 3 mana to untap Krenko. Which means you can tap Krenko again and get a bunch more mana from Mana Echoes, which you can use to untap Krenko. And then if you have a... You could have a Purphoros out there too, but it would be a very short Christmas.
God.
This is not the 12 days of Christmas. This is, we're done with Christmas. It's over.
Wow, that's lovely. Are you running all of those cards in your Krenko deck?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That feels less like Magical Christmas Land and just like a disgusting infinite loop to me.
Well, it doesn't even have to be infinite. I can do this 5 times. Yep. That's fine with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is that bring us back to that. Doing an infinite doing a loop 5 times should normally put you ahead enough. People that moan about that rule. Anyway, who plays with this stupid commander?
Sand Triplets.
Oh, me. It's me. It's me, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this was a Magical Christmas Land I've desperately tried to achieve and nearly done it so many times, which is Sand Triplets with Mycosynth Lattice, which makes every permanent in the game an artifact and can be cast for colorless mana. For generic mana. Bribery and one of your opponent's Hellkite Tyrants. So, the gravy on top of it is Darksteel Forge to make sure your stuff is indestructible while you're doing it. So, you play your Mycosynth Lattice, play your Bribery, or use your Sand Triplets to cast someone else's Hellkite Tyrant, either from their hand or from their deck. And in my meta, someone normally has a Hellkite Tyrant.
Why? Haven't they learned?
Keep it alive for a turn, which is where the Darksteel Forge comes in handy, because it makes all your artifacts, that's all your permanents, indestructible. Then attack with the Hellkite Tyrant and gain control of every permanent on the table.
Yeah.
And automatically win, normally.
Yeah.
That, sir, is Magical Christmas Land. Santa, I've got there so close before. I've got the tyrant onto the table before, and then someone returned to dusted the Darksteel Forge and the Hellkite Tyrant. I was like, no! Bastards! Utter bastards!
So in true so British close. Fashion, Sean celebrates Christmas by taking everyone else's gifts away.
They're all mine, even your land. Now piss off! Anyway.
Wow, that makes my next one...
Teach you to buy me socks and deodorant again?
Yeah.
So,
Well, that makes my next one ridiculously tame in comparison, right? So, with Rune of the Hidden Realm, he's the guy, of course, you pay 2 and tap in order to effectively bounce a creature till the end of your turn. Of course, you're playing a lot of Enter the Battlefield effects. Well, what better Enter the Battlefield effect is there? Well, okay, maybe there are a few, but Hornet Queen comes close. And with... A conjurer's...
Hang on. You mean friend of the show?
Hornet friend Queen. Of the show, Hornet Queen, that's right. With her and a conjurer's closet out, you can make an army, or what are they, a squadron, several squadrons full of angry buzzing hornets in the air. And if your opponent doesn't get on top of that very quickly, it will end the game. So... They will attempt to destroy either your Hornet Queen or the Conjurer's Closet, and so the other element to Magical Christmas Land here is an Avoid Fate, which is a green counterspell. So when they try to shoot your Conjurer's Closet or shoot your Hornet Queen at instant speed, you just counterspell that and prevent them from doing it.
What does Avoid Fate do specifically? I know there are loads of green counters. What does this one do specifically?
Yeah, this is a great green counter. This one is counter target instant or aura spell that targets a permanent you control. Again, magical Christmas land. Yeah, it's a one shot. It's a type of card we don't typically play, but surprise!
Now, Christmas means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And Lazav is a lot of different creatures to a lot of different Dimir players. So my Lazav, and I've pulled this one off actually a few times.
Yeah, you have.
Is Consuming Aberration, Altar of Dementia, and then Traumatize someone. And then keep cloning the Consuming Aberration to keep making vast amounts of giant creatures. And if so, you can keep attacking with them. And if someone tries to kill them, you sacrifice them at instant speed to the Altar of Dementia to mill like 60 or 70 cards off their deck.
Yeah, that is so absolutely brutal.
What I have done once was this exact combo. Milled someone with the Consuming Aberration who was also, I think they were in Sultai, and they dropped their own Consuming Aberration into their graveyard with the mill, to which Lazav became a new consuming Aberration.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yeah. You thought you got rid of him, did you?
This is why you run Krosan Grip.
Oh, screw you, Krosan Grip. I love you and hate you in equal measure. Ruined my fun so many times.
Indeed. Indeed. Nate, do you have one more?
For Jaleva, I would probably say maybe World at War, and then any extra turn spell, and then you could do something like Army of the Damned or Rise of the Dark Realms and just beat up some face.
That's great. Yeah, because it requires that when you exile World at War, an extra turn spell, and then Army of the Damned or Rise of the Dark Realms. And in that sequence, it's brutal. I mean, I've seen you do it without the Army of the Damned, and it's horrible.
Yay.
Yeah, it's good.
There's a theme with your decks, Nate. Your decks tend to just make me cringe. Hey, they're so brutal.
I like to think Nate's decks make you go, ah, my face, my face. Whereas my decks stop you wanting to live.
Yes, yes. Your Silumgar deck is just the very picture of oppression.
So that deck is only as good as the oppression you wish to foist upon. Mm-hmm. It is a reflection, as I said to someone recently, that deck is merely a reflection of the darkness that lurks within your own soul. And that's why you don't like it, because it shows you how fundamentally wrong you are as a
player. Yes, how bad of us to play a commander that's a creature.
Or a planeswalker. Well, yes. Don't forget. I added an extra magical Christmas
line. Yeah, I think we've all seen or heard about this one, right?
One of the times of year Christmas makes people is people like to forgive people at Christmas, don't they? They like to say it's a time of cleansing. I know Easter as well, but Christmas, you put down old animosities and celebrate everyone. It's a holiday for everybody, isn't
it? Wait, I thought that was... You're describing Festivus.
Festivus, or as I like to call it, Decemberween, which... I stole from the now defunct cartoon Homestar Runner, but when I heard him describe Christmas as Decemberween, it went immediately into my lexicon of terminology. Decemberween, Decemberween, you're 57 days after Halloween. Here's a good song.
God.
But in the spirit of Christmas inclusiveness and letting old animosities lie, I've said Magical Christmas Land, all 10 guild gates in play, followed by a Maze's End to win the game.
Wow. Yeah, that really
is. If you pull that off, you can drop your mic and walk out of this room.
Right.
Boom.
Yeah, I've lost to that before.
You have?
Yeah. It was a 5-color Pillow 40 deck with a lot of, you know, like Azan, not a zombie. Who's the green one that lets you play two extra lands?
Azusa.
Yeah, it had
Azusa.
It had a lot of land tutoring and extra land playing and card draw, and didn't really have any offense. It just had pillow forts and just drawing for lands.
All it takes is one destroy target land effect. Your fun is over.
Yep, not everybody has those.
I run Ghost Quarter in every single deck I have.
And if you're doing the...
Is that not something that everyone does?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, just, Ghost Quarter,
just a Maze of Ith protection more than anything. I don't run Strip Mine because it's expensive to buy. But Ghost Quarter Tech Edge.
Yeah.
Anyway, bravo, Nate. If you pulled that off, bravo.
No, I didn't pull it off. It was pulled off. It was pulled upon me.
Oh, it was pulled upon you? Oh. I bet you felt like you'd just downed an entire bottle of eggnog. Sort of sick, regretting your poor life choices.
Yeah, no, I like eggnog. At the same time,
drunk and warm. Oh, you couldn't down an entire bottle of
eggnog. Oh, God.
You just watch me.
Eggnog, right? Made primarily of advocaat. So when I was...
Wait, what? I didn't hear what you said.
Eggnog, the drink. Eggnog, the drink, is made primarily of advocaat. That's the alcohol base in it. No? Were you unaware of this?
What is advocaat?
It's spelled advocat, but it's pronounced advocaat. A-D-V-O-C-A-A-T. I've probably spelled that wrong, but I think that's how it's spelled. Did you not know that?
It's literally... We use rum here.
Wait, isn't that the word for lawyer? Is it made from ground-up lawyers? Lawyer juice?
That's an advocat. One second. I'm just going to...
No, I've Googled it. I've searched it. Looking recipe. Up stuff on the internet. Advocaat, or advocatenborrel, is a traditional Dutch alcoholic beverage made from eggs, sugar, and brandy.
Yeah, so...
I gotta have this.
Oh, right. It has the look, smell, taste, and consistency of old stale custard. And when I... my friend Tom McGranary used to go to the School of Oriental and African Studies. And when we were poor students in London, the local Walmart would only sell advocaat all year round. It's normally only drunk at Christmas, but all year round, it would be like £3 a bottle. So I spent a year of my life getting drunk with Tom on an alcoholic beverage that is basically is egg liqueur.
Oh, it is the Dutch word for lawyer. It's made of lawyer juice.
Well, I can tell you now, lawyer juice is both sickly and stomach-turningly disgusting, yet at the same time produces a warm, drunk feeling, which...
holy smokes.
...is cheap enough for students to enjoy.
Yeah, the typical alcohol content, thank you, friend Wikipedia, is generally somewhere between 14% and 20%, and its contents may be a blend of egg yolks, aromatic spirits, sugar or honey, brandy, vanilla, and sometimes cream or evaporated milk.
All right.
Yes, egg liqueur.
Oh, God.
Egg. I'm going to send you a bottle.
Oh, please do.
Chug off. I challenge Phil to a chug off of...
I was just going to say, Nate, when is the next time we're getting together? Instead of a bottle of tequila, it looks like we'll be each having a bottle of advocaat.
Get the buckets ready.
Advocaat.
Wow, this is going to be...
There's going to be European listeners. Robin's going to be listening to this. And other people going, of course, advocaat.
We make eggnog with brandy. Or rum.
Oh, no, if you see in England, you mix this horrible, filthy stuff with... often with lemonade, and I mean like European lemonade, not American-style lemonade. And you make what's called a snowball with apricot and lemonade. That's kind of eggnoggy, kinda. But yeah, because you've already got eggs in the apricot, and the rest of it just adds up to nog, I guess.
Wow. I shouldn't whistle into the mic, sorry. This is something that must be consumed. All right. That means we've probably come very close to the end of our show, doesn't it? I mean, if Nate is playing Fallout, and you're barbering and I'm crinkling envelopes, That's the sign.
Let's move on.
Yeah, exactly. So for the three listeners who have remained through the end of the show,
well done.
Well done. You're probably drunk. Thank you for listening because we love you. That's right, you. Yeah, it's kind of creepy when I do that, isn't it?
Wait. You know who I'm talking to. Yeah, you. Just turn the lights down low.
Oh, I'm going to look away while you do this, Sean.
Maybe run a deep bath, and I'm going to tell you.
Merry Christmas.
Place me the H for me, baby. I'll give you your special Christmas present later.
Merry Christmas, everyone. That's what
Susie has to look forward to. In the...
Poor Susie. She puts up with so much and then has to deal with that on top of it.
Well, Susie, and this is genuinely true, Susie, before she met me, being a Jewish young lady, had never celebrated Christmas. And it's not like Judaism in America where Jewish people, you know, generally integrate with the rest of the populace. In England, we only have a very small Jewish community and they live in their own little area. So they generally have very little exposure. So I told her all sorts of Christmas traditions we do that aren't true.
Oh, excellent.
Not true at all. No, we get extra presents on Christmas, on Boxing Day. That's true. So I get an extra present every year.
That's great.
Yep. It's honestly true.
Oh, your poor wife.
No, she doesn't listen to this show. So
right.
Hi, darling.
That's right.
She tried, bless her.
You know, I was going to say to our listeners to take the time to contact us, but I don't know if we want that at this point. It's just going to be hate mail. So if you have something you want to say to us, you can write to cast@commanderandmtg.com. I promise we'll listen to that.
Oh, yeah.
So our theme song, Hello Uncomfortable Christmas, it is. It's like a Christmas.
Oh, Phil.
From childhood.
What's the theme song?
Merry Christmas, everybody. We hope you've enjoyed this show. More than we've recorded.
Ho, ho, ho.
Who knows? A whole chunk of this is going to get edited. Our theme song was created for the podcast by Fallout champion Nate Burgess. Our logo was created for the podcast by MrPicto.co.uk with assistance from Kelly. Special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin for his server space. You can go to our website, which is commanderandmtg.com. Our email, once again, is cast@commanderandmtg.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, especially YouTube. Visit YouTube, watch the videos. Nate puts a whole lot of effort into that and spices it up with graphics and all sorts of fun things, plus occasionally extra content. And you can also find us on mtgcast.com and Reddit, all of those by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast. Individually, on Twitter, I'm at Ketjack.
I am at Copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And this has been a wonderful Christmas episode. Merry Christmas, everybody. And if you don't celebrate Christmas, happy holiday of your choice. And we mean no offense. Well, Sean always means offense. And Nate plays like he means offense. And that's...
Hey.
I was leading you into it.
Hey. Listeners. That's our show. It's Jabba. Father Jabba.
Skywalker, no Jedi.
And that's our show. I'm just going to do some barbering. Little off the top.